Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Sean Kirst. Sean is a former award-winning columnist for the Syracuse Post-Standard. His profiles of the people of the region earned him a loyal following. He's recently published a book based on those columns titled The Soul of Central New York. Sean, welcome back to the program.
It's great to see you, Grant. It's good to be here.
So, first of all, congratulations on your book. I have read that it is the fastest seller that Syracuse University Press has had. And to note on that regard, they've also published books by and about sports figures. So it's quite an accomplishment. Good on you for that.
Oh, thanks. It was not what I anticipated, but I'm happy about it.
Now, the book is based on the columns that you wrote for the Syracuse Post-Standard between 1991 and 2015. And in the beginning of the book, you apologize about having to choose for the book just 87.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Of the thousands of stories that you told about the people. And so you say you hope they'll be emblematic. So, you know, the first question is, how did those 87 columns get chosen out of all those thousands, and who did the choosing?
I originally, the idea of the book had been around for a long time. I started working on it about 4 years ago. The original version, there were, you know, I went through all my columns back to 1991, and, you know, I was writing three a week, so there were thousands of columns. And the original version, there were about 150, 160 columns, I put them together, and I put an introduction and an epilogue on it, and I thought it was pretty good, and SU Press sent it out to some readers, really professional editors that they hire, and they beat it up rightfully. They said it felt thrown together and haphazard, and that it didn't have thematic flow and in some points repetitive. And they were right, and they sent it back. And my initial reaction was to kind of sulk about it and walk away for about 6 months. And then I started to really think about it. And when I left the paper and had some time, you know, what was it that I wanted to do with this book? And Mike Streisguth, another writer in town, and I were having coffee one day, and he put it to me, you know, what's the theme? What's the idea? And it was one of those amazing instances where it all sort of fell together, you know, it all fell into line. And I realized that I wanted to do the same thing with the book I did with columns. And that's when, really, almost at that moment, the idea of breaking it down into qualities And by breaking it into qualities, sort of reducing the number of columns, I had SU Press brought in a new editor, a woman named Allison McShann, who's terrific, who, you know, kind of said to me, if you can't get it down, let me do it.
Editors will do that.
Yeah, and so she got it down to about 80, and I begged, borrowed, and pleaded to get another 10 in, and we finally settled on 87. And you know, I honestly, I feel really good about the way it worked out. There's another one. I mean, if I didn't have other things going on, I could sit down and do another one tomorrow with the ones that were on the floor. But
well, yeah, and it, you know, I'm sitting here holding the book, and it, you know, for what it's worth, it feels like about a good length. You know,
yes.
I think if it had been double, I think that'd be sort of almost like a biography of a president or something. You
too
know?
Much.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And you do have these themes. You know, They're all inspiration, honor, love, loyalty, diligence, resilience. So it seems organized there. Now you write in the book also at the beginning that the challenge of being a columnist in Syracuse was never finding enough columns to write. It was the opposite.
Oh,
it was finding enough time to write all the columns that you could write, and that you say in there, interesting phrase, you remain haunted by the tales not told.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you, looking at where Syracuse is now, given all of the time that you've had to live in it and look at it, looking at where Syracuse is now and then rewinding back to when you started writing columns in the early 1990s, is there a type of column that you wish you had written more of, or a general topic that you wish you had given more attention to?
Oh, my God, a general topic over I mean, I can it's more a case of I look back and I can remember columns that I can remember choices that I didn't make, places that I did not write columns. I can remember specific moments when I wish I had said something or and didn't for whatever. Columns are very strategic. I mean, it's not like, for me at least, it was always the idea of trying to move the boulder. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're writing columns for a point. You're writing columns. I believe that a columnist is supposed to affect the community in a positive way. Not everyone would see it that way. But that was my belief. So I was always thinking strategically with columns. If you beat something too many times, you beat a topic to death, it's going to lose effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Or if you come off as sounding like you're carping, then you're going to lose your readers. You always want even readers who disagree with you to consider your point. You want to be respectful. And so there are moments, there are columns that I did not write that I can remember. Now, if I could do it again, I would.
Well, let me explore one possibility here with you. Just curious to get your reaction to it. And, you know, this is now my lens looking at this, and I've been in the area since the early 90s myself. It seems like such a big issue for this region is this issue of suburb and city.
Right.
Sometimes often suburb versus city. And, yeah. You know, the folks that live in the suburbs are such a big part of the readership of the paper. And that, you know, that sense of what is the value of the city? What do I owe the city? You know, I'm working there and I'm coming back to live in this area. I wonder whether, you know, a theme that would have looked more at the suburbs and trying to make that link, because you were a great advocate for the city, and,
right.
and a lot of your columns were about the city, and you live in the city. I'm just wondering if that is an untapped vein that needed attention. I guess I'm being a little bit of a critic here myself.
No. I would actually argue. What's funny is that isn't the place where I would look at. To me, as a columnist, one of the major goals was communion, and I think you're absolutely right. One of the wonderful things about Syracuse, and this is, I think, if the book works beyond Central New York, it's the idea that the qualities you try and capture with the book are universal qualities, right? Yeah. And a lot of these stories are universal stories, even if they happen here. I mean, an awful lot of what I tried to do was to remind people, and this is a line I've used before when I speak, that there is more that binds us than divides us, and that in a community that can be way too divided, the feeling of holding a child. This is, if you pick up a one-year-old in Cicero and you smell Johnson's baby powder and you feel that child's head on your shoulder and you feel the warmth of that child, that is exactly the same feeling that you get in Pioneer Homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so an awful lot of my work with, was just that idea that. In some ways, core experience in the city was similar to core experience in the suburbs. I'm not talking about money. I'm not talking about education. I'm talking about core human experience. And really, if that was my goal as a columnist, that's what I attempted to do. I think if you went back and just broke my columns down statistically, that it would surprise you how many were written about the suburbs. Not necessarily just, I think maybe a lot of the stuff I did on the city is maybe more memorable, you know?
Yeah, I think you might be right there. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Sean Kirst, former Post-Standard columnist and the author of The Soul of Central New York. I wanted to ask you a different question about the theme of your work. One theme of your work and of this book, and it's also a theme of your own reflections, I think, about your work when you're writing about it, to try to put it into a word, is sticking. You know, sticking with people, sticking with an area.
Yeah, a region, a community. Absolutely.
And you have an excerpt from the preface I want to read and then ask you a question about. You write, "The gift of the job was the chance, day after day, to spend time with people who had gracefully confronted potentially crushing obstacles in life, yet who had somehow embraced the simplest and most daunting of all strategies. They kept going." Now, my question is this. There are people, though, who can't keep going, you know, who get defeated,
right.
who don't get up again. It's usually not their fault. And this region has created a lot of those folks for a variety of reasons that you talk about, big tectonic changes.
Right, right.
And that's part of the backdrop for the other stories of the people who do get up. So what do you think is the lesson that we should draw from those stories of defeat and from those people who get caught in that in a way that that don't get up.
Well, I think that the the point you're challenging me on, I don't think my columns are ever some sort of simplistic hokum that held up the idea that.
I don't mean to suggest that.
You know, I mean, I wrote. I think if you read that column, there's columns in there about guys who were beaten to death by the cops, and there's columns about people living on the street, and there's columns about people who have suffered catastrophic loss, and my theme was never the idea. I think my theme was less the idea that of some sort of philosophical you should take whatever blow you can in life and get up from it. My themes were always that in many ways civic progress depends on a depth of understanding about circumstance and the difficulties of others. So therefore, I mean, I've got a line in the book that talks about every time I see a guy, you know, every time I see one of those men or women standing on the corner with holding those signs, my thought isn't, boy, that bum should get a job, because almost always that's a person suffering from abuse or addiction or struggle or some sort of catastrophic wounds. And the question becomes, how do we deal with it? What have we done wrong that those people are on the corner? I like to think the idea of truth is such a complicated idea. But I think if you tell true stories and you tell stories with some complexity, that hopefully they make people think that in the end, there are certain problems that the only way to deal with them is as a community.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Sean Kirst. He was the longtime columnist for the Syracuse Post-Standard, and he's the author of a new book titled The Soul of Central New York. Sean, I know you a little bit. I think you may not like the role I'm about to put you in, but I'm going to put you in it anyway.
Sure.
Orrin Lyons is a faith keeper for the Onondaga Nation. He makes appearances in your columns. And I think, like him, you are a kind of faith keeper for this region. So I've got some things I want to tap your thoughts on that are not necessarily about the columns in the book. First, I have a question about the state of the news media. There's been tectonic financial changes in it in recent decades, and we've seen the effects of those in papers all around the country, but, you know, particularly in the Post-Standard. You and I talked about some of those changes last time you were on the program. I've got a more specific question about that as it regards the kind of work that you do. Do you think the era is over in which a regional columnist like yourself would be able to have the time and the space to develop the body of work that you did and take the time to develop it and focus on it in the way that you did, given the constraints that papers like the Post-Standard are under right now?
I think, you know, it's interesting. I mean, it's been on, I think, a lot of our minds because of Breslin's death. That was, that's been being asked around the country if the era of that kind of columnist is gone. I'll take a small question and turn it into an enormous question, I guess. I think that it is critically important. Will there be exactly – now, I always wrote 900 to 1,000 words. Is that a form that will continue to exist? Maybe it'll be 500, 600 words. Maybe it'll be some different – maybe it'll be video. But I think that eventually, whether it's digital websites, whether it's, the remnants of print, whatever it is, I think you are still going to need – I mean, the question really goes down to what do we sacrifice? I'm not going to use myself as a model, but we need longtime community voices in every community, or else you don't understand a community. And if that's what we're going to lose with journalism, because outlets are shrinking and they can't pay what they used to pay, and because there's a different sort of transient culture and people don't stay in one place and kids are drawn to the big media markets. If that happens, I mean, it's a loss. And I'm not saying it has to be done the way that I did it. But I do think that, even now when stories happen in the community, when I got to the Post Standard, there were 6 or 7 people in their 70s and 80s in that newsroom, and they were valued. It wasn't like they were there because, I mean, you know, Mario Rossi and Gus Bliven and Joni and Lois and Ed Reddy and Steve Rogers the Elder. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people were dynamic forces who remembered everything. And if you were a kid, you went to them and mm-hmm. you listened to them. So the role of longtime voices are important. The issue, Grant, is how do we shape that with the great changes that are going on?
If you just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is the writer, Sean Kirst. Let's say it's up to you. What would you do with I-81?
I bring it down, and I use the 690 as a conduit and run it out to the 481. I still bring the 81 downtown from the northern suburbs past the mall. Commuters still can get right downtown. I create a boulevard downtown, and then for traffic coming around the city, which is a tiny percentage of the 81 traffic, that's what I use, and I consider that a compromise because northern commuters still get their access, and the mall still has its direct access.
That sounds like a good bet of where we're going to go. I have a question about the mayor's race. We're about to have a mayor's race before too long that figures to be competitive, at least perhaps within the party. That's likely to win the Democratic Party, but we'll see, and certainly important to the city's future. Briefly, what do you think are the most important – are there certain important new qualities or new skill sets that new mayor will need to possess for the city?
You know what I'm really enjoying right now? And this is I've written a lot about King's speech here in 65 where he says if you don't do something about integrating your schools – you're going to commit generations to violence and loss. And we didn't. We didn't do anything about it. It stayed the same. I think that, I think the whole consensus idea, you cannot go near it unless you talk about the schools. You got to talk about them. And again, going back to King, you can't say it takes time because it's been 50 years and nothing changed. You know, that if we're going to do consensus, we have to talk about it in a sweeping community way in which everyone's involved. And for the same reason we care about the guy in the corner with the cardboard, we've got to care about this situation. And if the community doesn't care enough, if people do not really care, if they don't see suffering in the core of their own community, and forget the city and the suburbs, this is our community, if they don't see that suffering, then it won't change because they don't care. But we've got to try.
And I was going to ask you a question about the consensus, and you brought it up. And the way that you have talked about it, then it kind of circles around to that question I asked about columns that might have been written or the suburb city thing. You mentioned the schools. That I think it's not in there because it's such a third rail. I mean, it's almost like thinking of a national analogy. It's like talking about messing around with Social Security. I mean, how do we have that conversation? Because that will just – my sense of living out in the suburbs is that's just going to send people screaming and running right away. How do we do it?
You do it the same way the Onondagas tried to do it when they talked about their land claim. I mean, what the Onondagas immediately said is we don't want anybody's house. We're not going to take your house. We have no desire to take your house. We just want to take this thing to court and because we feel like we were historically wrong. This has nothing to do with claiming your property, you know? And I think that the same thing with talking about doing something in the schools is we are not going to bus. We're not going to make a kid who lives in Clay have to go to Central High School. We're not going to mess with your kid. What we're going to do is Grant, if I'll be defensive here for a second. 1999, I write a column about Tom Young throwing a dime in the middle of Salina Street and how he called for creating pie-shaped districts in the county. That you have 4 or 5 pie-shaped districts, and they compete with each other, all of them running in from the county line to the middle of the city, and you create equity and resources. But you still have neighborhood schools, and a lot of kids in the city, a lot of families in the city, they don't want their kid on a bus for 2 hours. There are so many misconceptions and preconceptions tied into the idea. You got to do it new. It's not – It is equity of resources. It is ludicrous that someone who lives on Reinman Road in the town of Onondaga and can throw a tennis ball against the side of Corcoran High School goes to a high school two miles away. I mean, that's insane. What are we doing? We've got three high schools in Fowler, West Hill, and Corcoran within a mile and a half of each other. And it's like someone, you know, if Trump was going to build a wall, you might as well build a wall there. It's like they're divided. And we can't talk about these things. But if you take away the threat, we're not going to screw with your kid, then it becomes something else.
Just a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you one sort of lighter question. And then,
yeah.
But one of the things that comes through the book and you talk about in the preface is your arrival here and it became your home. And now, you know, you're a Syracusan.
Right.
No one's ever going to challenge that. So I have a question for you. Let's say, though, you couldn't live in upstate New York. Okay, you love Syracuse. It comes through. But let's say you couldn't live in upstate New York. Where would you live?
Oh, my God. that's if I couldn't live in upstate New York, I mean, you know, just in terms of I've got a brother who I'm very close to and nieces and nephews I'm very close to in Charleston, South Carolina, and it's spectacular and it's beautiful. Upstate New York is I've got this emotional resonance, but once I'm out of here, because I don't have that feeling anyplace, you know, Colorado's beautiful. There's a million, there's a million beautiful places out there.
And then lastly, tell me a little bit about what your plans are for writing now and going forward. What kinds of things are you kicking around and thinking about?
You ask me at a moment where it's tricky for me to talk about it, but I'm writing for the university.
Whatever you're comfortable with.
Well, I'm writing for the university. I'm doing a lot of work there, and I've been writing for the Buffalo paper for almost a year now, writing a column or two a week usually, I just think the great revelation for me, Grant, of leaving the job at sometimes you got to leave something to a – Dylan had a wonderful quote. Sometimes you make sacrifices you're not prepared to make and they remind you of who you are or something like that. And the great thing for me about leaving the Post-Standard was really reasserting for me the value of that work. It's important what you're talking about. Writing those kind of columns and being in a community has value and it means something to people. And so in some form or another, I think I'll keep doing what I do.
That was Sean Kirst. And again, his new book is titled The Soul of Central New York. It's available from Syracuse University Press. Sean, thanks so much for talking with me.
It's great seeing you, man.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.